Start the shiur today in the new sugya on Kuf Yud Alphabet Beis. Let's just go over the Gemara that we learned a week ago, which began on Kuf Yud Alphabet Aleph on the bottom of the daf, going on to the next Amud. And we were talking about Tzlias Kaved and the purpose of Tzlias Kaved, of roasting the liver, is to get out the blood. And the question is, there's other pieces of meat that are also being roasted at the same time that you're doing the tzli on the kaved. What is the juxtaposition here? What is the relationship between the kaved and the basar, the liver and the meat? If the liver is on the bottom and the meat is on the top, that's less of a problem. And that, in the Gemara's language, is called Dika. He says, Kavda Tuse Bisra. So you have Kavda Tuse Bisra, and yet you have Kavda Eloi Bisra. So you can either have the coming on top, and the blood goes down into the basar, or you could have the basar on top and the kaved on the bottom. So the Gemara says the following, that basically the rule of thumb is that kavda iluye bisra shari, if the kaved is on top of the basar, then the dam of the kaved is mishrak sharik. So it means it just rolls off, so to speak, the top of the basar. It's not nivla in the basar. And the Gemara says that in the case of chal, it's a little bit different. Leaving out chal for a moment, we're going to focus now on kavda. And then the Gemara goes and says here on the top of Kuf Yud Alphabet Beis that there's going to be an exception to this whole set of rules in the case of Beidugi. So let's understand the following. We said that if, let's say, you have the basar on top of the kaved, so that in that case, the Gemara came to the final conclusion, the name of Meremar on the bottom of Kuf Yud Alef of an Aleph, Shari. But that's the case of Kavda Tuse Bisra, where the Basar is on top. If the Kavda is on top, the Gemara says that L'chatchila it should be avoided. Then the Gemara qualifies all this. The Gemara says that even though we were matir, the case where the basar is on top, there is a situation where the basar on top will generate an isur if the kaved is on the bottom. And that's going to be the case of beidugi, which means that he puts a receptacle on the ground, you know, on the counter space or wherever it is, to receive the shuman hanotef min habasar. It collects the shuman that drips from the basar. He intends to use that shuman as gravy to eat it. That's why he's collecting it in a receptacle. He's not letting it just fall on the ground. Now, even though the basar is on top, but nevertheless, what's going to happen is that the dam kaved is going to fall into the shuman, because there's a beidugi on the bottom that's collecting not only the shuman but also the dam. And Gemara asks, well, forget about the kaved. Let's say there was no kaved. He was just doing tzliya on the basar itself. So the dam and the basar is going into this beidugi, mixing together with the shuman Hanotef min habasar. So why are you telling me that the only reason is because of the dam kaved? What about the dam habasar. And the Gemara differentiates between the dam of basar and the dam of the kovid. The dam of the basar, the Gemara says, is dama de bisra shachan. It drops and it collects all the way on the bottom of the receptacle, the bottom of this beit duge. Whereas the nature of shuman is that it floats up to the top. So there's never tarovis here between the dam of basar and the shuman of basar. But in the case of dam hakoved, kafe means saf lamal. The dam hakoved floats to the surface. That's where the shuman anotef min habasar is, and it creates a tarovis. So that's the sugya that we did a week ago. And we began the sugya last week of Rav Nachman Omer Shmuel, the Sakin Sheshachat Ba. So what's the status of the knife which he uses to shech the animal? And the knife comes in contact with the dam. Now, normally, we would say that dam, in this case, is tzonei. And usually when something is tzonei, there's no blia. But Shmuel disagrees, and he says that there's a principle called Beis HaShchita Roseach, that the neck of the animal, as it shechted, creates a resichus. Resichus means it warms up the dam. So what's going to happen now is that this sakin, this knife that he uses to slaughter the animal, is now bolea the dam, because the Beis HaShchita, that area where he does the shechita, is roseach. And as a result, the dam is now absorbed in the sakin, in this knife, because of the Beis HaShchita being roseach. Now if he uses that knife without taking the proper hechsher, the proper precautions, to cut some sort of hot food, then the dam that's absorbed in the knife is going to go out into that food substance and generate an iser. So therefore, also lachtoch bo roseach. Sonein, but if he wants to use the knife to cut something, a substance that's cold, that he's allowed to do, because although the sakin was boleh for the Beis HaShchita, the dam, because the Beis HaShchita is roseach, however, it's not polate unless it comes in contact again with something that's roseach. And then the Gemara is going to quote a machlokes, in this case of tzonein, are there any restrictions whatsoever? Or is it just laissez-faire, carte blanche? He could just take the knife and cut anything that's tzonein, that's cold, without any precautions. Amrilei, there's one opinion that says boy hadocha, he's got to rinse it out. We'll explain this first according to Rashi, and then we'll see a long footnote number ches, which is where we stopped last week, and see the Shita Satosis here. And Amrilei, there's another opinion, lo boy hadocha. So what is this hadocha? Hadocha means to rinse it out in cold water. So Rashi understands that the machlokas here about boy hadocha or lo boy hadocha has to do with the food stuff. Let's say he cuts a potato, a cold potato, with this knife, the sakin shel shechita. So according to Rashi, there's a machlokas here in the Gemara as to whether or not he has to rinse off the potato before he eats it. As if to say that there's some surface level of blia on the outer surface of the foodstuff that he cut. Now, this sugi that we're learning here is really in a sense, it's a grafted sugi. The original is back on Daf Ches, and there on Daf Ches, Tosis disagrees with Rashi, and he interprets that the controversy here in our Gemara about Hadocha as a requirement is with regard to the sakin itself. Should we assume that although he's cutting something cold, but nevertheless, there is not the dam balua. The dam balua that's absorbed within the sakin, that for sure is not going to be niflat in tzonein. But maybe, perhaps, the knife itself on its outer surface has some sort of an attachment of a little bit of dam, some sort of leftover shirayim of dam, and therefore, according to one man d'omer, you have to clean off the knife before you cut it. That's very interesting. The Tosfos is medayik. It says boy hadoch. Do you see the word boy? According to the first man d'omer, now that word boy is written with an aleph at the end, and that makes it into Lashon Nekeva. You have to be an expert in Aramaic grammar here. Now, the difference between a machal, which is a foodstuff, and a sakin, which is a knife, is that the word machal in Lashon Kodesh is a masculine word, whereas the word sakin in Lashon Kodesh is a feminine word. So why would the Gemara use the term boy hadacha to require cleaning it off in the feminine if it's referring to the machal, as Rashi interprets it? But rather, says Tosfos, we should say that the word baya is referring to the feminine sakin, and it means that the knife has to be cleared off. Eric?
After shechita, wouldn't you expect that the knife would be cleaned off anyway? Because you'd have blood all over it.
So, that's true. You mean it doesn't seem to be necessary that we have to tell him to clear off the knife. Right. Good point.
I could just wipe it off, not wash it off. Could have been. I don't know. When they do a bunch of shechitas, they wash the knife each time. They do the bdika. They wash it. I never saw that they from one
animal
one
to the
next,
other.
They check the knife again afterwards.
I expect they clean it because you don't want to contaminate one meat with the other nowadays, but I don't know if they used to do that.
I don't remember now. I haven't been in Schlachter's for a long time.
Right. So we'll see if there's a very long footnote here in Masifta. I'm going to break it down into three parts. The first part we did already, and he presents the two interpretations of Hadocha here, whether it's referring to the Machol or to the Sakin.
What is hadacha? Is there, if I just spray spray the knife with a hose, is that hadacha?
As long as the thorough cleaning, you have to make sure.
For a kos, what do you do? You don't have to.
You have to do a thorough rinsing.
Yeah.
It's hadacha.
Okay,
part two. Tosfos there, again, on Daf Ches, explains that there are different dinim that we should know about as far as using this knife bitsonin, once the knife was prohibited because it was bolea from the Beis HaShechita, which is Roseach. He says the following. The first law is, the first rule, is that if you want to use this knife biakroi on a temporary basis, then it's sufficient to do hadacha. Again, you're using it. You have a knife that has a bliya, in this case of dam, but it could be any dover asur. And now you want to use the knife on a temporary basis to cut sonin. Again, if it's roseach, you have a real serious problem. He says the following, that if you're using it to cut sonin on a temporary basis, then all you need is to rinse it off in cold water. Alternatively, you could clean it off with bgadim bluyim. That's like what we call a shmata, some sort of a rag. V'oz, and once you do that, you've cleaned off the sakin. This is Tosfos l'shitaso that Hadocha is referring to the sakin. Mutar lachtoch bo davar tzonin. You're allowed to cut on a temporary basis something that's tzonin. However, sakin shel goy, he says that there's a different law with regard to a sakin shel goy. The sakin shel goy is assumed to have been used time after time for, cutting non-kosher food, non-kosher meat, and so forth and so on, and probably hot meat. So since chatchu b'magoyim dvarim shalisa b'kvius, therefore ein lachtoch but sonein, you might think that all I have to do is clean off the non-Jewish knife, if you follow my point, and use it to cut sonin. No. We need ne'itza b'karka. We have to take the knife, I don't know if you've ever seen this, and we have to penetrate it into the ground, eser pa'amim, 10 times, lahavir hashem nunis, in order to get rid of anything that's al ponov, you know, that might have been, again, you and I don't see it on the knife, but halacha sees it. Halacha sees things that we don't see, so to speak. And you need the itza makarka. Then Tosis quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam opinion, his opinion is, ein chiluk bein akroy lekeva, the difference between a temporary and a permanent use, ela bein sakin shechotcho b'dover iser otzeach otzone. According to Rabbeinu Tam, a whole new set of regulations. What did you use this knife for? Obviously you cut something that's osur. Was that food that you cut that was also rotseach, was it burning hot? Or tzoneg, or was it cooled off? Here are the rules, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Im chatchu bo davar rotseach, if he used the knife, even on one occasion, to cut something that's hot, also lishtamish ba, he's not allowed to use it. Afil with tzoneg, even for something cold, ad shi'inat senu eser pa'amim. In other words, even though he only used it on one occasion, but he cut something hot that was asur, he's not allowed to use it even to cut something cold unless he does ne'itza. Which is a little bit strange because our Gemara is talking about a sakin shel shechita, and beis hashechita we say is roseach, and yet all the Gemara debates, and even that the Gemara vacillates, is whether you need hadacha. There's no mention here of ne'itza. Could be that Beis Hashkita Roseach is not exactly, right, you know, Roseach. It's Kir Roseach, but it's not really Roseach. Then he writes, if let's say he used the knife to cut Isur, but the Isur is Tzonein, then Daila Badochas Tzonein O Biblui Begodin Kidei Lishtamish Bo Litzonein. So if he used this knife on it, on an occasion, it doesn't matter how often, even on one occasion, to cut Isur, but the Isur was cold. So imagine he used it, you know, for non-kosher cheese, cold cheese, or something like that. Then that's our Gemara about Tzonen. That you, about, I'm sorry, about the Hadocha, that you need Hadocha in order to cut something Tzonen. In that sense, Rabbeinu Tam is a big machmir, because until Rabbeinu Tam, we only thought that you would need Hadocha in the case of something that was used to cut roseach, but something that was used to cut tzonein doesn't even need hadacha. But Rabbein Tam says no, if it was used to cut iser b'tzonein, it requires hadacha. So here's the kash on Rabbein Tam. Afal pisha b'sugya seinu v'sakin sheshochet bo, if he shechted with a sakin, is bola hasakin alide iser roseach. The whole basis for the requirement of some sort of hechsher or hadocha on this sakin is our sugya that talks about beis hashchita. He says mikol makom. He says nevertheless the beis hashchita is not totally roseach and therefore, but yesh matirim. Some say that mikol makom, even in the case of the Beis Hashkita, which is considered like Roseach, Lachtoch Bat Sonein Al Yidei Adocha, we still allow cutting something that's cold through Adocha, whereas Rabbeinu Tam in this very same case would require Ne'itza, because it has a certain amount of Resichus to it. V'yesh Matir Mafil Al Yidei Kinuach, and if you're going to be Matir through Adocha, it could be Kinuach is enough. That's what we spoke about before, Begodim Bluyim. And he says the following, that there's a third sheet here. This is already Roman numeral number 3, which is the Ran. And the Ran claims, and that's how the Ran interprets Rashi, Shesakin Sheshochat Ba, Dai Bahadocha, Afilu Kidei Lahatir Lachtoch Ba Roseach. This is the most extreme Shita Lakula. So we had the Rabbeinu Tam is the most Machmir, we have Rashi who's the most Mekil. And in the middle, we have the, how should I say, the thrust of the Rishonim that we saw in the name of Tosfos. They take the middle ground. So again, Rabbeinu Tam's extreme shita was that in the case of kiroseach, which means the beis hashchita, you're going to require not only hadacha, but you require the eats as well. The middle ground would say that beis hashchita is considered kiroseach, and that's why in the case of roseach you need a hadacha, but if you cut something that's absolutely tzonen, you don't even need hadacha. And according to the middle ground, the only time that we jack up the requirement from Adocha to Ne'itza is in a case of a Sakin Shalgoi, because in that case it was used on a regular basis to cut, let's say, hot trefers. And then we have Rashi Shita, the way the Ran understood it, which is the most Mekil Shita. And he says, even a Sakin Sheshachat Ba, you're allowed through Adocha to cut something that's Roseach. Again, it's against our Gemara, but let's just understand the Ran. The Ran is saying that Beis HaShechita is not really Roseach Mamish. We're going to require Hadacha, but once you do the Hadacha on the knife of the Shechita, then you can even cut Heter that's Roseach, that's absolutely hot. What happened to the Blia inside of it? Again, obviously the Ran holds that Blia is not a full-fledged Blia because Beis HaShechita is kiroseach, but it's not really roseach. He says the following, that according to the Ran Shita, behechrech, we have to assume, shebenidon le'inyin tzonein, shenechtach ba, medubar kishtamshis ba b'lo adocha o kinuach. That when the Gemara discusses the case where he cut something that's tzonein, the issue was that he didn't clean off the knife at all. But if he cleaned off the knife, then even though it was used for Shechita, he would be allowed to use it even to cut something that's Roseach. Uledas ha-mater ha-machol lo hadocha. Okay, then he asks a number of questions on this run. Okay, that's enough for us, I think, now. Okay, now we start a new Gemara. So let's make sure we're all in the same place. We're on Daf Kufir Aleph Amid Beis. And we're up to Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. And this would be about 9 lines down from the top. Ka'ara Shemolach Babasar. What's the status of a utensil that was used for Malicha? Which means that does this Kara, this utensil, absorb the taste of the Dam? Right, so you take meat and you're salting meat. I mean, we don't see this today in our kitchens because whenever you buy meat in the grocery store or if you go to the butcher, it's already been salted. When I was a child, my mother used to do a malich on kovet, but on basa, I don't even think I ever saw it. On basa.
Used to have the boards and.
Where is that in Boston?
In Malden, yeah. My father was a shofet, so.
Oh, okay. So that's something
to bring
else.
It home. Yeah. Okay. Or do it in the back.
Very good.
It was a shock of forest in the driveway.
So the question I'd have for you is, what did you do? What was the status of the utensil in which you did the malicha? So Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, also lechel ba roseach. You're not allowed to use that receptacle for hot food. And the reason for that is that through the process of malicha, there is a bli of dam into the kara, into this receptacle. So this receptacle will actually absorb the taste of the blood. And the reason that happens is because we have another principle similar to the one that we learned before about the beis hashchita, and that is that maliach kiroseach, that when you salt something, the salting process is itself a kind of a hot, it generates a heat. Again, when we say generates a heat, these are not biological heats that you can necessarily put a thermometer in and measure it. It means in the halachic world of Blia, Maliach has a din of Roseach. Shmuel itamei, the Amr Shmuel, Maliach arehu kir Roseach. Now, this statement of Shmuel, that there isn't a substitute for heat that's considered like it's Roseach, which means there is a Blia. We've seen it in the case of the Beis HaShechita, and now we see in Shmuel applying this kind of reasoning to Maliach, is now the Gemara is going to apply it in a third case, and that's Kavush HaRehu Kimavushal. What happens is that if you soak something in vinegar, let's say, for example, and again, we're going to have a whole discussion here about Rashi Sheet. The Rashi Sheet is that kovush is a word that means soaking in vinegar. Other Rishonim are going to say that kovush means soaking, but Rashi says it means vinegar. And vinegar has a certain sharpness. It's what's called a dover charif. As a result, even though everything is absolutely cold, it's considered as if you cooked it together. Now, how long does it have to be soaking? Let's assume, for the time being, again, we're going to have to get into this, that it's 24 hours. So full day, he soaks a foodstuff in vinegar. And arehu kimavushal, which means it's as if he cooked it on a pot over the flame. So that now, let's say, for example, he has isur and heter, which are both soaking together in the same pot, and everything is cold. He has to throw everything out. Again, if he doesn't have bittul, b'shishim, but it means that the tam of the isur goes into the heter, even though they weren't cooked. There's no fire going on under the flame, simply because of the fact that they were kovush, that they were soaking one into the other.
But does it matter what they're soaking in?
That's why I say Rashi Shita, there's a long discussion about this. It's all based on sugyas in Avodah Zarah, Benafis, and other places in Shas. Rashi Shita is that kol makom shenevar kovush, whenever we learn in the Gemara kovush, hainu shenichbash b'toch chometz o b'dover charif. So it's not that they're soaking in water. That's Rashi Shita. Now, in order to appreciate this Rashi, you have to go through Rashi in five different places. Rashi in Masechta Shabbos on Daf Kuf Yud. Rashi in Masechta Pesachim on Daf Lamed Tes. Rashi in Avodah Zarah on Daf Lamed Hey. And you will see, as you go through Rashi's, there's another Rashi in Beitza, there's another Rashi in Moed Katan, there's a Rashi in Sanhedrin. You will see that Rashi consistently says that kvisha, which means soaking, is becholetz. It's always in some sort of very sharp liquid substance. Okay, fine. The Rashba agrees with Rashi, and he writes a whole tshuva about this in Shuta Rashba, that lo amru kovush kibivushal ela bedover hacharif. Here, he adds one little point to Rashi that we don't have in Rashi, and he says dvara hacharif kimelach ukechometz. So he adds salt into the list. Salt is considered a davar charif, according to the Rashba. Now, who disagrees with Rashi and the Rashba? So first, we start with the Mardechai, one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz. And the Mardechai in Masechta Beitza has a number of proofs to establish that afilu bidvarim she'enam charifim, even in liquid substances that are not sharp, kegon b'shemen mayim o yayim yesh kvisha v'kovush kimavusha. Now this would be a gevaldige chumra, obviously, because if you have isur v'heter soaking in water or in oil, according to Rashi and the Rashba, that's nothing. Garnish. Nothing changed over here. Everything that was mutter remains mutter. But according to the Mardechai, it becomes kovush kimavushal. I mean, you realize the implications of this. I mean, there are a lot of things that we soak in water, and all of a sudden I find out that I soak something in water that's awesome.
You leave it sitting in the sink overnight.
Yeah. Now it's interesting that so far all we know is the Mardechai. You know, if you put the Mardechai against the Rashba, who the Rashba is almost like the Balabas on Issa Mehetta, he's like the bottom word, and you put it against Rashi, you know, okay, we love the Mardechai, but so the Beis Yosef in Yerideya Simon Kufei quotes the Rosh, and he proves for the Rosh that the Rosh himself agrees with the Mardechai. That already throws a whole different light on the subject, because you know the Rosh is one of the three Amudim of Psak Halacha for the Beis Yosef. So the Shulchan Aruch is based at least to some extent on the Rosh. Now usually the Tur will agree with the Rosh. I can't promise you in this case, but if you put the Tur together with the Rosh, then you have to know what the Rif Sheet is and the Rambam Sheet is. But I don't know if the Rambam and the Rif make any comment over here.
What does the Shulchan Aruch hold? I'm almost there.
We're almost at the end. You have to bear with me because you gentlemen weren't able to come. Hopefully, not for the same reason that I wasn't able to come. I was sick in bed. I'm coming here right from my sick bed. So wish me a refuah shleima. Yeah, my voice is still on the blink, but I'm hoping, you know, this was unbelievable. This lingered on a full week. I never had it like this. Every year in the wintertime, I get it, but usually it lasts 2 days, 3 days. This has been awful. I mean, yesterday I hit my bottom low. Malish, I was sick like a dog yesterday. Anyway, he says the following. Hevia Beis Yosef, Machlokas Rishonim, in addition to the original machlokas about what about water and other liquids that are not choref, he has another machlokas about shir kavisha. How long does it have to last? How long are they soaking? So here we have a kula of the Mordechai, the same Mordechai who was machmir and said any liquid is enough. Now he's mekil, and he says eino nikra kavush elu lushori shlosha yavim. So what your wife left in the sink overnight, no problem, according to the Mordechai. So we don't know whether we like the Mordechai, we don't like the Mordechai. We like the Sefer, but not the Reisha, right? Then the Beis Yosef quotes other Rishonim, who say that Dai Bekvishas Yom Echad Be'eis Le'eis, all you need is 24 hours. And the Rush writes that it all depends what you put it into, what was the liquid substance. He says, if it was a davar charif, it was really something sharp, then you don't even have to wait 24 hours, it's already kemuvushal. Kol sheshar shir kazeh, how long did you let it soak in, let's say, vinegar? That was our classic example. Sheim ha-yenosno al-gavi ha-or, if he would put it on the fire, ha-yeroseach u-maschil l-hizbashel. Normally when you have a substance that's raw, it takes a while until it gets, you know, heated up and then it starts cooking. The cooking process does not begin immediately. However, if you've already let it soak in something that's charif, that's sharp, then it already prepares the food, let's call it the meat or whatever it might be, for bishul. So that immediately when you put it on the fire, it begins to cook. So basically, you have to do a scientific study, according to the Beis Yosef, in the name of the Rush, in the case of Kavush B'Dover Charif, and look at it and say, well, it only sat there for an hour, it was soaking for an hour in vinegar, but let's look at it. You know, is it already softened up, so to speak? You know, it's already Hechshiru et HaKarka, you know, you already prepared it for Bishul. Now, Eric asked me, what's the bottom line? Pasaka Beis Yosef, and I'm assuming we're going to see this also in Shulchan Aruch, his final conclusion is the following. I think he's going to go with the middle ground. Let's see if I'm right. Kol davar shenichbash bedvarim charifim kechometz, anytime you let it soak in something that's sharp, like vinegar, v'chadome, he doesn't give you other examples, but anyway, he says, dai lonu Bishir Harosh. All we need is what the Rush says, is that if you would put it on the fire, would it begin to cook immediately? However, Bekavush Bidvarim She'enom Harifim, then he says, Tzarech Lios Kavush Be'eis Le'eis. So in other words, he's machmir like the Mordechai in the Rush, that there is Kavush Kimavushal, even in the case of Mayim, and shemen, and something that's not charif, but he's not going to go as far as to accept the chumra that even if it was less than 24 hours, it's already considered kavush. So we're going to have a chumra in the case of a davar charif, and even less than 24 hours of soaking would make it into mevushal. Again, then you have to do this, I don't know how, but do the scientific experiment to see, you know, how long it would take to cook it. But in the case of something that's not charif, then kovish kibuvushal only applies after 24 hours. So the Rashi and the Rashba that we began with, it is not accepted la halacha by the Shulchan Aruch. And even though you'll ask me, why do we have to be so careful because of the Mordechai? I don't know if the Mordechai necessarily tips the balance against Rashi the Rashba. But the answer is that he found the Rosh. And once he has the Rosh, that's already, shall we say, a head of a different color. It's the Rosh. And that we have to take very, very seriously. Now, Rabbosai, we got off a little bit on a tangent, so to speak. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel that we're studying today, the main thrust of our study is not about Kavosh, even though we spent a lot of time on Kavosh. And it's not wasted time, trust me. But the main thrust is on Malicha. What's the status of Malicha? And Ki Asa Ravin, Ravin comes from Eretz Yisrael, and he quotes Rabbi Yochanan. You know, Rabbi Yochanan was the giant in Eretz Yisrael after the period of the Tannaim. And whenever somebody came from Eretz Yisrael at that particular period of time, he would quote Rabbi Yochanan to tell us what's the Israeli psak. And Ravin, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, well, I'm not sure if he's a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, but he very often went back and forth from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. He claims that according to Rabbi Yochanan, Maliach eino karoseach, v'kovosh eino kimavushal. Just the opposite of our tradition of Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Shmuel. Now, the good news is that Rabbi Yochanan is a powerful, pillar of halacha. And if Rabbi Yochanan, disagrees with this principle of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, which is a principle with such, chumrah, with such strict and severe ramifications, because you're considering something to have a blia, even though there was no cooking process and no heating process, either in the case of Malicha or in the case of Kavush, and Rabbi Yochanan, according to Ravin's tradition, denied it. Now what's going to happen now is that Abaye is going to completely ignore, or shall I say, reject the statement of Ravin. Now, if Abaye rejects the statement of Ravin completely, Mamish throws it overboard, like, then Abaye must have heard something from Rabbi Yochanan to the contrary. Even then, I would wonder if that gives Abaye the gumption to say that what Ravin said his tradition is incorrect. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan vacillated on this point. But not even that. Abaye didn't hear a word from Rabbi Yochanan. Abaye was in close connection with someone by the name of Rav Ami. Now, Rabbi Ami was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. And what happens? Oh, Rabbi, Hadu Ravin Lesa, forget about what Ravin said, just cross it off. Dahi Pinka. Pinka means this, before we spoke about the word Kara, you remember we had the word Kara was the receptacle in which he did the Malicha. That was the utensil in which he did the Malicha. Now we substitute for the word Kara Pinka, and the significance here is that a Kara could be made of, let's say, a metal substance, but Pinka is an Aramaic word that refers specifically to china, to porcelain, to something that is called in Hebrew a kli cheres. Now, in the laws of Blia, kli cheres is the most severe kind of kli because it's so porous that any kind of blia that goes into the walls of the kli, it's impossible to get rid of it. Now, I'm not sure if that applies today in our kli cheres. Our kli cheres is a whole different entity. We call it cheres, but it's not really cheres. But in the old days, it was literally made of clay. And it was a real serious problem to get rid of the blia. Tahavi Beirav Ami, I personally, says Abaye, were present in the house of Rabbi Ami. The Molach Bei Bisra, he took this pinka and he used it to salt meat. And Vitavre, and he broke the kli. He smashed it to smithereens. Now, you and I might not get so, you take a piece of pottery and you smash it. Big deal. What's it worth on the market? 20 shekel, 10 shekel. But in those days, the Chachamim throughout Shas were very, very careful. They didn't break things. They didn't bust it. They didn't shatter it. Why? Because of Baal Tashmis. Obviously, if Rabbi Ami did so, he wanted to be absolutely sure that no one would ever use this pincha for any sort of heter. You might say, well, in the case of Kara, which is Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel, also lecha boroseach, so then Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel would say the following: you want to eat something hot, some heter hot, then go and do hagola, you know, do hechsher with it. But in the case of Kli Cheres, which is this pincha, there's no possibility of hechsher. That's called in the Lashon HaShas, Eino Yotzu Midei Dofyo Li'olam. And therefore he broke it, he smashed it to smithereens. Okay, fine, that's the story of Rabbi Ami. What's it got to do with us? Says Abaye, Michti, let's analyze this. Rabbi Ami, Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan Hava. Rabbi Ami never moved one inch, not to the right, not to the left, of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan. He was a complete devotee, a disciple, you know, like a chassid his Rebbe. My time at Tavre, what right did he have to break this pincha, this kara that was made of cheres? It must be lav mishum deshmiel le mineder of Yochanan, that he is an authoritative source that he heard from his Rebbe Rabbi Yochanan. The Omer, the Rabbi Yochanan, in fact, said Moliach Hareu Kiroseach. Now, the original Moliach Hareu Kiroseach is a tradition that we have in the name of Shmuel. We never had that tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. On the contrary, it was Rav Ovin who had a different tradition, that Rabbi Yochanan said that Moliach Eino Kiroseach. But the very fact that Rabbi Ami took the kara, in which he was molech babasa, and he broke it to smithereens, it must be that he held, and he got this from his Rebbe Rabbi Yochanan, that Moliach Hareyu Koroseach. This sugya, by the way, has repercussions in the literature for other sugyas in Shas, that you can reject a tradition based on the fact that you saw a Talmud acting like his Rebbe. Now there's a whole bunch of footnotes here on this sugya. I don't have time for today, Bli Neder. If you're up to it, we'll do it tomorrow. And for now, I just want to use it. We only have about 5 minutes left, maybe just to get a little bit more of the blot, you know, of the Gemara itself down. Yosef Rav Kahana Achua de Rav Yehuda Kami de Rav Huna. So Rav Kahana, the brother of Rav Yehuda, sitting in front of Rav Huna. Rav Huna is the Gol Ador. The Yosef Vika Amar. So Rav Kahana hears the following statement. This is the halacha that's formulated here by Rav Kahana. He says, Ka'ara shemolah babasa also lechel baroseach. Oh, so far we feel very comfortable, very secure, because basically this statement reflects what we saw before, that moliach kiroseach. And therefore, if you do malicha in a kara, then you're not allowed to use that kara for roseach, for anything that's hot. Now, even to use it for cold, we're going to see that's only on a temporary basis. You know, you cannot use it on a regular basis for cold, because then, who knows, you might use it for hot. But at least on a one-time basis or on a temporary basis, we're going to allow to use it for cold. Okay. So that's the first part of the statement here that was said by Rav Kahana in the presence of Rav Huna. Then he made a second statement. This is the sefer. Utznon shechatocho besakin. Now, what's going on here? Until now, we spoke about a sakin that you use the knife to cut the beis hashchita, and the beis hashchita is roseach, and therefore you can't use that sakin without hadocha to cut cold. to cut a cold. And then we spoke about it, cutting hot and the whole business. What about a case of cutting something parva? It's known as a radish. It's not fleishiks, it's not milchiks, but the sakin is fleishiks. So do we say that? What do you say, Asher?
I just have a question. Is known harif itself?
Oh, excellent. Okay, so the tznon has a harifus to it, and that reminds us of what we discussed according to Rashi and the Rashba in the case of kavush, that when you have an element of harifus, it changes the whole perspective. And since this tznon, this radish, is a harif, so what's going to happen is the harifus, the sharpness of the radish, is able to somehow achieve removing, to be maflit, you know, to take out the tam of the basa that's inherent in the sakin, right? The sakin was used on many occasions for cutting hot meat. And there's a certain element here of what we call shamnunis of basar. And what the harifus of the tznon is, that through the cutting of the knife, this radish is able to absorb the tam of the basar. Now, if that be the case, this radish should be considered a fleshika radish. It's almost as if he took the radish and cooked it in a pot of meat. And certainly you would not be allowed to use that tznon together with cheese. And yet, to our surprise, Rav Kanda said in front of Rav Huna, "Mutali ochla bekutach." He's allowed to put this radish into kutach. Now, kutach is a kind of a sour cream of sorts. The Gemara in Pesachim has a whole discussion about kutach habavli, and basically, it has milk in it or whey, and it has melach, which is salt. And they used to put in crumbs of bread that was old, you know, it was already what's called pas me'upeshes, which normally you wouldn't eat, but when you mix it together with all these elements and they soak together, then it becomes a delicacy of some sort. It's kutach habavli, it's a whole entity. And now he's going to allow Rav Kahana, taking this stone that was cut, mind you, with a fleshika knife, and using that stone as a mixture, as one of the ingredients in the kutach, and eating it together with kutach. My timer. Why is this okay? You would think that the stone has the status of a fleshika radish. Omer Abaye, and this is going to be a major, major sugya for us, hai hetera bola. That this case is not similar to the case of the Karash al Dam, which was the Resha of Rav Kahana. The Karash that was used for Malicha, the Kara through the process of Malicha was Bolei Dam. Dam is Asur. Here, when he cuts the tznon with a fleshika knife, the basar that's coming from the knife into the radish is itself Hetera Bola. In other words, the Bliya itself is called Hetera. But high in the case of the Karash and Nimlach Mabas, the Surah Bal, Amalei Abaye, Rav, this will have to end it for today. Ki Bal Atayr Mai Havi, what difference does it make? Who cares if the Bliya of Fleshiks into the Tznon is Heter? In and of itself, the Torah allows you to eat meat. Go ahead and eat this radish with your Fleshik at dinner tonight. But now you want to eat it with Kutach. Sof Haya Atayr Diyasi Dei Surahu. It's Heter in and of itself, but now you're going to mix it together with what? With kutach, which has milk in it, is he surah ka'achal? Now he's eating a combination of a fleshik and tznon, which has absorbed the tam of basa, together with milchiks. That itself is a tarovus of milchiks and fleshiks, and he's not allowed to do that. And the Gemara is going to develop a whole system here where what we're going to do is we're going to take this radish that was cut by a fleshik knife, and we're going to give it to some sort of an expert. He's going to taste it, and he's going to tell you whether the tam or the basar is inside the radish. So that's called te'imas kfil. So this, we're really on the verge of beginning two different sugyas that overlap, both major sugyas in Yoridea. One is called hetera bola. So that's going to be the case of the fish, which was cooked in a fleshika pot. Now you want to use the fish with milchiks. And then the sugya of te'imas kfeilu, which means that sometimes we can even rely on a guy, if he's an expert, he's a chef, and he'll taste it for us and tell us if there's tam inside. But again, what I want to start tomorrow is this major footnote here about ka'ara shemolchu bo basar, okay, with shemolichu.